acting like this wasn't the first time he'd played helpful. I forced a smile through clenched teeth. I'll look around Dad's study at home to make sure he doesn't have any old files stashed there. Perfect. You can give whatever you find to Lucian. I glanced at him and found him already looking at me. Together, we turned back to my mom.
What's going on, Karen?
He asked at the same time as I said. What's going on, Mom? Simon loved you both. When the cancer came back, he started thinking a lot about what was important for a good life. And the kind of grudge you both seem to be carrying isn't healthy. I shifted uncomfortably in my seat. The idea I'd done anything in Dad's last months to make him unhappy was like fresh lemon juice being squirted onto the raw edges of my grief. Dad was disappointed in me? I asked, my voice husky. Mom reached for my hand and squeezed it. Of course not, sweetheart. He was so proud of you. Both of you, for everything you've accomplished, everything you've built, how generously you've given. But life is unbearably short. This animosity you two are hanging on to is a waste of that precious time. Okay, I'm sorry, and no offense, but what does Lucian have to do with our family? Mom and Lucian shared a long look until he subtly shook his head. That right there, I said, pointing at his face. What the hell is with the secret headshake? Lucian has done more for this family than he'll ever let me say, Mom said finally. For instance? The words came out high-pitched and panicked. Lucian, my mom prompted him.
No.
She rolled her eyes at him, then looked at me. For one thing, he sent me and my friends to the spa after the funeral.
Karen,
Lucian said, exasperated. Mom took his hand with her free one, connecting us through her. Lucian, honey, at some point you're going to have to stop denying.
What can I get y'all today?
Bean Taylor, in suspenders and an apron smeared with breakfast foods, appeared, his grease-stained notebook at the ready. The man was an angel on the grill, but one of the clumsiest servers on the planet. Hey, Bean, good to see you, Mom said, releasing our hands. What did Lucian have to stop denying? What secrets did he and my mom share? We Waltons were an open book. We knew everything about each other. Well, almost everything. Listen, I need to hit the road, Mom said, grabbing her purse and throwing cash on the table. But it would make me very happy if you two would stay and have breakfast. And I hate to pull the guilt card, but I'm hanging on to anything that makes me happy with both hands right now. Her eyes went glassy with tears. I rose with her and wrapped my arms around her. Maybe if I held on tight enough, she wouldn't go.
I'll give y'all another minute,
Bean said, backing away from the emotional display. Mom, don't go. My voice broke, and she squeezed me tighter. I have to. It's good for me to be productive and start thinking about what's next. I think it'll be good for you, too. You need to get back to work, she whispered. Besides, I'm only a phone call away. I sniffled. A phone call in some of the worst traffic in the country. I'm worth the traffic. I let out a choked laugh. Yeah. I guess you are. I love you, Sloane, Mom whispered. Be happy. Do good. Don't let this derail you for too long. Dad wouldn't want that. Okay, I whispered as a tear escaped, streaking down the curve of my nose. Mom released me, gave my arms a squeeze, then turned to Lucian, who was sliding out of the booth. He stood, dwarfing us both, smoothing a hand down his probably monogrammed button-down. "I love you," I heard Mom tell him. His reply was too soft for me to catch, but I noticed how he hugged her to him with closed fists, his knuckles going white. "Stay. Eat," she insisted again when he'd released her. He nodded. "Bye, Mom," I croaked. She wiggled her fingers at me, eyes still glistening, and headed for the door. I stood there watching her leave, feeling like Anne of Green Gables before she met Marilla and Matthew Cuthbert.
"Sit."
Lucian's gruff command was accompanied by a broad hand at my back, guiding me back to the booth. I slid onto the bench my mother had vacated and stared unseeingly at the menu in front of me.
"She's going to be all right, Sloan."
That raspy rumble caressed my name with irritation and something else. "Of course she will," I said stiffly.
"So will you."
I couldn't snark back at him. All my focus was on willing the tears to be reabsorbed into my face. I would not be weak in front of him. Again. "You don't have to stay," I said, looking everywhere but his face.
"After that guild trip, I'd have breakfast with Rasputin."
Even through my blurred vision, I could see him shaking his head vehemently. "What don't you want me to know?" I demanded. "Were you blackmailing my parents? Did you trick them into a cult or multi-level marketing scheme?"
"Those are the only options you can come up with?"
he asked.
"Psst, is it safe to come back and take your orders?"
Bean asked, tiptoeing back to the table. "Sure, Bean." I managed a weak smile for him. It wouldn't do me any good to have rumors circulating about the town librarian's public meltdown. I had a reputation to uphold. I was downright terrifying when the situation called for it. It kept my library and my life here in Knockemout running smoothly.
"You know you've got stains all over your shirt?"
Bean pointed at my sweatshirt with his nub of a pencil. "I had a run-in with a coffee pot this morning. I'll have the usual with a hot chocolate." I deserved a comfort beverage.
"Extra marsh, extra whip,"
Bean clarified. "You know it."
"And for you, Mr. Rollins?"
I snorted internally. This was Knockemout for Pete's sake, and Bean was barely a year younger than me. But it was Mr. Rollins this and Mr. Rollins that.
"Egg white omelet with spinach and vegetables,"
Lucian ordered.
Ugh.
Even his breakfast order annoyed me. And the way the man couldn't be bothered to say please or thank you made me want to hit him in the face with the napkin dispenser. I narrowed my eyes at him. Lucian blew out a breath through his nostrils.
"Please,"
he added before collecting our menus and handing them over.
"Sure thing,"
Bean said. "Thanks, Bean," I said before he scurried back to the kitchen. Once he was gone, I returned to glaring at Lucian. Would it kill you to be polite every once in a while, or do those suits leech the humanity out of you?
"I'm surprised you didn't order the glitter pancakes off the children's menu to go with your mug of granulated sugar."
"Have you ever even had the diner's hot chocolate?" I asked. "Oh, wait, I forgot. You're violently allergic to fun and happiness. When are you flitting back to your depressing vampire lair of seriousness?"
"As soon as I make it through this breakfast with you."
Another server appeared to top off Lucian's black coffee and deliver my hot chocolate. It was a work of art. The thick-handled mug was topped with a veritable tower of whipped cream. Many marshmallows dotted the white swirl, and Bean had topped the entire thing off with a generous dusting of pink, glittery sprinkles. I felt a tickle in my throat, another prickle behind my eyes. I was not going to cry over a cup of hot chocolate, no matter how obvious it was that it had been made with love. That was why I loved this damn town so much, why I never wanted to live anywhere else. We were all intimately involved in one another's lives. Step outside your front door, and if you looked past the leather and exhaust fumes, the luxury SUVs and designer equestrian wardrobes, you'd witness a dozen small acts of kindness every day.
You're ridiculous,
Lucian said as I pulled the mug to me with both hands. You're jealous.
You can't even drink that. You'll end up wearing it.
I scoffed and reached for a straw. You're such an amateur. With precision, I inserted the straw from the top to ensure the proper cream-to-chocolate ratio. Here, I said, sliding the mug toward him. He looked at me as if I'd just suggested he stir his coffee with his penis.
What do you expect me to do with that?
I expect you to taste it, make a face, and then tell me how revolting you think it is, even though deep down you'll like it so much you'll start plotting how to order one without me noticing.
Why?
Because you sent my mom to the spa with her friends when she needed to be reminded that she could grieve and laugh. Because you stayed here to suffer through a breakfast neither one of us wanted just to make her happy. So take your one sip, because that's all I'm willing to share, and then we can go back to ignoring each other. To my surprise, Lucian took the mug. He raised it to eye level and examined it as if he were a scientist and the hot chocolate was some yet-to-be-discovered member of the spider family. I tried not to focus on the way his lips closed over the tip of the straw, the way his throat worked over his single swallow. But I did notice the fact that his grimace came half a second too late.
Revolting,
he said, sliding the mug back to me.
Happy now?
Ecstatic. He picked up his coffee but didn't drink, because maybe under his $50 million suit jacket and his rich guy beard, he was just a little human after all. I should have opened a new straw, should have made a show of avoiding putting my mouth anywhere near where his had been, but I didn't. Instead, I plucked it out of the drink, reinserted it on the opposite side of the mug, and closed my lips over the spot his had occupied mere moments ago. Warm, sugary goodness hit my tongue with just the slightest hint of crunch from the sprinkles. I wrapped my hands around the mug and closed my eyes to prolong this tiny pocket of perfection. When I opened them again, I found Lucian's eyes on me, his expression complicated. What? I asked, releasing the straw.
Nothing.
You're looking at me like it's not nothing.
I'm looking at you and counting down the seconds until this meal is over.
And just like that, we were back on an even keel. Bite me, Lucifer. He pulled out his phone and ignored me while I scanned the breakfast crowd. The diner was hopping as usual mid-morning. The patrons were mostly retirees with a few horse farm folks and, of course, the usual biker crew mixed in for good measure. Knock'Em'Out was a unique melting pot of old equestrian money, freedom-seeking outlaws, and burnt-out middle-aged beltway bandits. I felt the weight of Lucian's gaze on me and pointedly refused to meet it. You don't have to do this, you know. I'm sure you have better things to do, I said finally.
I do, but I'm not going to be the one to disappoint your mother today,
my surly tablemate said. My glare should have incinerated him. Does it take more or less energy to be an asshole every second of the day? Because I can't figure out if it's your natural setting or if you have to put actual effort into it.
Does it matter?
We used to get along.
I don't know why I said it. We had a tacit agreement never to discuss that time in our lives. His gaze slid to my right wrist peeking out of my sleeve. I wanted to hide my hand in my lap, but stubbornly kept it in plain sight on the table.
"We didn't know any better then," he said, his voice hoarse.
"You're infuriating."
"You're irritating," he shot back.
I gripped my straw like it was a weapon capable of stabbing.
"Careful, Pixie. We have an audience."
The nickname had me flinching. I managed to tear my gaze away from his stupidly beautiful face and glanced around us. There were more than a few sets of eyes glued to our table. I couldn't blame them. It was part of town lore that Lucian and I couldn't tolerate each other. Seeing us enjoying a meal alone together had probably already ignited the gossip chain. Any one of those people would have no qualms about reporting back to my mother. I carefully returned the straw to its whipped cream home base. "Look, since you're too stubborn to leave and you're not inclined to tell me why you and my mother are besties, let's find some topic of conversation that we can both agree on to get through this interminable breakfast. How do you feel about the weather?"
"The weather?"
he repeated. "Yes. Can we agree that there appears to be weather outside?"
"Yes, Sloane. We can agree that there is weather."
His tone was so condescending, I wanted to take the ketchup squeeze bottle from the stainless steel carrier and empty it all over him. "Your turn," I said.
"Fine. I'm sure we can agree that you dress like a deranged teenager."
"Better than a moody undertaker," I shot back.
His lips quirked, and then his expression smoothed into its baseline of irritated boredom. The bell on the diner door jingled, and Wiley Ogden lumbered in. Conversations cut off as gazes swung away from us to Wiley. Lucian didn't move a muscle, but I still felt a chill descend on the table. I hadn't seen much of the former police chief since the incident when Tate Dilton, an ex-cop gone rogue, teamed up with Duncan Hugo, the mobster's son, to shoot Nash Morgan. Wiley, whose long reign as chief of police was marked with good old boy cronyism, had been friends with the disgraced officer, but redeemed himself when he shot and killed Dilton. My opinion of Wiley had risen several points after that. I'd even almost smiled at him the one time I'd seen him in the grocery store. The former police chief's gaze landed on our table. He froze, except for the toothpick in the corner of his mouth, which moved up and down. Then he made an abrupt about-face to find a seat at the opposite end of the diner counter. Lucian's cool gaze remained glued to the man. I felt something. Something that seemed suspiciously like guilt, which made me defensive. "You know, if you had told me everything, I wouldn't have..."
"Don't,"
he interrupted, as if he were telling a toddler to stop trying to put their finger in an electrical outlet.
"I'm just saying..."
"Leave it alone, Sloane."
That was what we did. We left things alone. The only acknowledgement of our shared past was the bitter aftertaste that colored every interaction. Neither one of us was going to forgive or forget. We would just continue pretending it didn't still eat away at us.
"Here's your breakfast,"
Bean said loudly. He slid steaming plates onto the table with forced cheer, and then oh so casually slid both butter knives into his apron pocket.
7. The Evil Corporate Empire. Lucian. Rollins Consulting Offices occupied the top floor of a postmodern building on G Street in D.C.'s Central Business District. The proximity to the White House meant that the street in front of the building was regularly closed for the motorcades of visiting dignitaries. The elevator doors opened to sleek marble, stately gold lettering, and a dragon. Petula Thou Shall Not Pass Roybena took her role as gatekeeper seriously. No one got past her unless expressly authorized. I'd once found her performing a bag search on my own mother when she'd come to meet me for a rare lunch.
Good afternoon, sir,
Petula said, rising from her chair to stand at attention. She'd had a long, decorated army career, and after 1 month of retirement had decided she wasn't cut out for a life of leisure. She dressed like someone's wealthy grandmother, and while she did indeed have 3 grandchildren of her own, Petula spent her spare time rock climbing. This information was gleaned from the extensive background check all employees were subject to. She had never once commented on her personal life and had a low tolerance for anyone else who did. Good afternoon, Petula. Any emergencies while I was gone?
Nothing I couldn't handle, she said briskly.
I held the glass door for her, and Petula marched ahead of me, rattling off the day's schedule.
You're expected to sit in on a conference call at 2:15. You have Trip Armistead at 3 o'clock and Sheila Chandra scheduled for 3:15. I assume this is either another diabolical power move or you finally made your first mistake.
Trip was a Georgia congressman and a client who was not going to enjoy our 15 minutes together. I never make mistakes, I said, nodding to the associate in the gray suit whose name I couldn't remember. Petula gave me a bland look.
I'll alert security. The cleaners won't be pleased if they have to get bloodstains out of the rug again.
I'll do my best to keep the bloodshed to a minimum, I promised. We headed into the busy field of cubicles where phones rang and employees diligently did whatever it was I paid them to do. The starting salary at Rollins Consulting was $80,000 a year. It wasn't that I was generous. It was that I didn't want to waste time constantly filling low-paying positions. The money also helped compensate for the fact that I was a demanding boss, an asshole, as it was probably whispered around the water cooler. If I paid my team members less, I'd have to be nicer, and that didn't interest me. We strolled through the cubicles and past 3 occupied conference rooms. What had begun as a one-man boutique political consulting firm that was willing to get dirty for its clients had evolved into a 115-person organization that put people into and took them out of office when necessary. And I still didn't mind playing dirty when it suited my objectives. A shrill whistle caught my attention, and I spied ex-U.S. Marshal Nolan Graham behind his desk in his glass-walled office, a phone pinned to his ear. He'd come on board a few months ago after he'd taken a bullet for my friend. I'd made him an offer it would be stupid to refuse, and he'd kissed his government job goodbye.
I'll leave you to Prince Charming, Petula said,
with what could almost have passed for a smile in Nolan's direction. It seemed that the man's charm had managed to put a few cracks in my no-nonsense sentry's armor. I paused in Nolan's doorway.
What?
He hung up the phone and triumphantly riffed a few keys on his keyboard. Cyber team got a few more suspicious money trails for you-know-who that were unraveling. Couple of fronts that look about right for laundering. Writing up the report now in case your bureau buddies want to take a closer look. It was a fine line to walk. My cybersecurity analysts, colloquially known as hackers, work their not technically legal magic to find threads to pull. Once we knew where to look, the rest of the team worked to confirm and pass along that information in ways that wouldn't get the case bounced out of court. Special Agent Idler was smart enough not to ask too many questions about how information fell into my lap. We need something bigger, a stash house, distribution routes, a higher-up with a grudge who can be turned. Something that would dismantle the organization from the inside out. What can I say? The guy's not as big a fucking idiot as his son. If you don't mind me saying, why not let Lena take a crack at some of the intel? She's in the office today, Maybe she can find an avenue we're overlooking. She has a personal bias, I insisted. I was not a my door is always open, here's the suggestion box kind of boss. I didn't want feedback. I wanted to tell people what to do and then not have to worry about them doing it. Besides, in addition to being royally pissed at the Hugo family for abducting her and nearly killing her fiancé, Lena also refused to fully commit to this job. At first, her part-time dabbling power play had been amusing. Now I found it irritating. Between Petula, Nolan, and Lena all being blatantly unafraid of me, I had concerns the rest of the employees would follow suit and start doing things like knocking on my office door for a quick chat or suggesting I host an office holiday party. Nolan kicked back in his chair. Let's see. If Lena's the kettle, that would make you the pot. I don't have time for your nonsensical bullshit this afternoon. Just to be clear, you're the pot calling the kettle black in that metaphor, he said. I don't have a personal bias, I lied. Nolan began a dramatic search of his desk drawers. What are you looking for? I asked. He paused, then grinned. A fire extinguisher to put out your pants fire? I thought you'd gotten less annoying since you shaved your mustache. I was wrong. He'd actually become significantly more likable after he'd stopped dating Sloane, a requirement of his employment with me. Fuck. I glanced at my watch. I hadn't even made it into my office before my first thought of her. I'd had breakfast with the woman. Why couldn't I just set her aside and move on to the next thing that required handling? Sloane Walton never did anything I wanted her to. I wanted a life where nothing made me feel powerless, out of control, and until I found a way to exorcise the woman, I would always be vulnerable. Just saying. Seems like you're waiting for her to prove her loyalty, and she's waiting for you to prove you're worth being loyal to. If you two don't try to meet in the middle, no one's getting off this fucked-up power trip merry-go-round. It took me a moment to realize he was talking about Lena, not Sloane. I don't recall asking you for your opinion. That's what friends are for. Speaking of, you want some backup with the feds today? I can stand behind you and make menacing faces. Nolan offered. I don't need backup. The fewer people directly involved in the Anthony Hugo investigation, the better. When Hugo caught wind of what I was doing, I wanted his attention focused solely on me. What I do want is the deep dive on Fund Its Partners in 10 minutes, I ordered. Already on your desk? He said, smugly tossing a peanut M&M into his mouth. It was less fun ordering people about when they'd already predicted what I needed and delivered it. On a grunt, I left his office and headed toward mine. You're welcome, Nolan called after me. Sometimes I wondered why I'd bothered hiring employees. They were all annoying.
Good afternoon, Mr. Rollins,
chirped a perky redhead who looked more like she should be studying for her driver's license test than working for one of the country's most ruthless consulting firms. I should have worked from home. Holly was 22 years old, the mother of two, and this was what she referred to as her first grown-up job. She acted abominably grateful toward me, as if the job and salary were personal favors I'd granted her. It made me uncomfortable and awkward. Your hair is interesting, I said. She turned around, giving me an unrequested view of the back of her head. Today she wore her hair in two thick braids that looked as if birds had uniformly worked their way down each one, attempting but not quite succeeding to pull them apart.
Do you like it? It's called bubble braids. I have a YouTube channel.
I don't care, I said. She let out a girlish giggle.
You're so funny, Mr. Rollins.
No, I'm not, I insisted. She waved away my statement.
I just wanted to let you know that I left a little something for you in your desk. You asked me about my lunch yesterday, so I brought you some to try.
I hadn't asked her about her lunch. I'd suggested she not microwave fish chowder in the break room because it made the entire office smell like the belly of a crab trawler. You really shouldn't have done that.
It was the least I could do, she said cheerfully.
How thoughtful, Petula said, reappearing at my side like an elite sniper.
Mr. Rollins will certainly enjoy your chowder for his afternoon snack. Holly beamed sunnily at us.
Just wait until I make you my tofu curry.
We watched her all but skip away. Christ, what was I thinking hiring her? I muttered.
You were thinking she desperately needed a job that could support two kids. She thinks you're a knight in shining armor,
Petula explained, opening the door to my office. I wasn't the knight, I was the dragon. Then she's either criminally misinformed or delusional, I muttered as I entered my space. It was designed to intimidate and impress. There was nothing homey or cozy about the glass desk, the stark white couch, the dark wood. It was formal, cold. It suited me.
It's not the worst thing in the world to have employees who aren't blatantly terrified of you,
Petula said, busying herself by hitting remotes to open blinds, switching on my desk monitors, and organizing paperwork by priority while I hung my coat on the rack inside the door. Between Nolan and Holly, you're going soft, I complained.
I insist you take back that insult, or I'll tell everyone you cry during SPCA commercials.
The wall of windows revealed an impressive view of DC's business district. Most of it was still blanketed in a pristine coat of white, thick enough to cover the stains and sins that happened behind closed doors in the nation's capital. I prefer people to be terrified. Then they don't try to talk to me about whatever the hell bubble braids are. And why are you so nice to her? You're mean to everyone. Petula huffed.
I'm not mean. I'm efficient. Niceties are a waste of time and energy.
I wholeheartedly agree.
What do you want me to do with this?
She asked, holding up the container of homemade fish chowder. Throw it out the window? She stared me down and waited. Fine, put it in my refrigerator. I'd throw it out when I was sure I wouldn't get caught.
Don't throw out the container, she'll need it back,
Petula ordered. Damn it. Anything else? I asked with irritation. Petula aligned the folders on my desk with a sharp tap.
These are priority. You have drinks at 7 p.m. at the Wellesley Club with two of the vice presidents from Democracy Strategies, and that investigator will probably be here shortly. I informed her you were absolutely not available this afternoon, but she was rudely insistent.
While she talked, I walked to the wall of glass and stared out over Washington, wondering what Sloane would think of this place and what I'd accomplished. I'd become someone, forged an empire, and I'd gotten strong enough, rich enough, powerful enough, that no single threat could take what I'd built. I'd vanquished the ghosts of the past. Thank you, Petula. That will be all, I said, suddenly anxious to bury myself in work. She looked down her nose at me.
I know that will be all because that's all I had for you. I'll let you know when that investigator arrives, and I'll send Holly back with your coffee when it arrives.
Don't, but she was already smugly sweeping out the door, dismissing me. It took 3 excruciating minutes of small talk about the weather and her son's sudden interest in watching other kids play video games on YouTube for me to pry the coffee out of Holly's hands. I was only on my second priority folder, a background check on a gubernatorial candidate in Pennsylvania, when that investigator riffed a two-fisted knock on my glass door. I gestured her inside. Nalana Jones was a private investigator whose deep pockets were lined by clients like me who could afford to pay a premium for dirty work. Today, she was dressed like a middle-aged suburban mom out for a power walk in dumpy sweats and a bulky belt bag. She was wearing a short brown wig under a car dealer baseball cap. Her pink sweatshirt said, "I love Maine Coon Cats."
"You look ridiculous," I said. "That's the idea. Nobody gives middle-aged Maud a second look when she hits the treadmill at their mistress's gym."
"I take it this is for someone else's job?"
"Yep."
She produced a flash drive from her belt bag and set it on my desk.
"This came in from a girl in Atlanta yesterday. The backups are already in the cloud. I also added a little juicy footage from your guys' arrival in town this morning. Right place, right time. Whatever you plan to do with this info, it's solid. There's no way he can wiggle out of it."
"Impressive as always, Nalana."
"Yeah, well,
That's why you pay me the big bucks, she said, slapping her knees. Anyway, I got a jet. There's a certain 22-year-old who's about to meet her 58-year-old married sugar daddy for a personal training session. I can't be late. I'll call you when I need you again. She tossed me a two-finger salute and sauntered out the door. I inserted the drive into my secure laptop and scrolled through the files. There were over 24 pictures and a handful of video files as well. Each one was enough to destroy a man's career. I printed 2 of the better stills, copied the files to a new secure folder in my own backup, then wiped the drive. I picked up the phone and dialed Lena's extension. What's up, boss? She asked with a hint of sarcasm so subtle I wasn't sure it was actually there. I might have a job for you, I said. A real one or another gopher task? Just get in here. Seconds later, she appeared at my door. I waved her in and gestured for her to take a seat. Her long legs ate up the space between the door and my desk. She sank into the chair and crossed one neatly over the other. How do you not get fingerprints all over that glass? She asked, staring at the pristine surface of my desk. I refrained from getting sloppy, which is what I'll need you to do. I slid the 2 photos across the desk to her. Do you know who this man is? She studied the pictures. The guy who looks like he was born in an ascot is Trip Armistead, our client and current member of the House of Representatives. I have no idea who the topless dancer is, but I'll shave my head if she's 18. I glanced at my watch. You have 23 minutes to take these photos and the information in the secure folder to build a compelling anonymous tip to be sent to the reputable news organizations of your choice. Are we actually pressing send, or are we using it to scare the shit out of our old buddy Trip? The latter. The man had the backbone of a crustacean. One quick snap was all it would take. Fun. I'm in, she said, rising from her seat. Why haven't you accepted the job? I asked. She paused, then lowered herself back into the chair. Does it matter? She asked cagily. I won't know until you tell me. Is it the compensation? Does Nash have an issue with you working for me? The compensation is fair. The work seems like it's interesting from the glimpses you allow. Nash is thrilled that I get to be home every day. Then what is it? Sloane? My grip tightened on the pen in my hand. You don't seem like the type of woman to let other people call the shots in your life, I said evenly. Lena scoffed. Sloane didn't tell me not to take the job. My hesitation lies in the fact that you're an asshole to one of my only friends for vague reasons that you both refuse to explain. I said nothing, and Lena continued. Maybe you're carrying some multi-decade grudge about something that happened when you were practically children, which would be pathetic. Or maybe you had a secret torrid affair that went south and now you can't stand her, which would be immature. Maybe she ran over your pet tarantula when she was learning to drive. I honestly don't care about the why. The bottom line is, I don't want to dedicate my working life to a man who treats my friend badly. Now, if you'll excuse me, I have a politician to blackmail. Trip Armistead was a blonde-haired, blue-eyed southerner who prided himself on his charm and pedigree. He was also an asshole who had officially outlived his usefulness. He entered my office, arms spread, palms up, a man certain of his importance. I looked forward to ruining that. Lucian, old friend, we should have done this in Atlanta. I was in my short sleeves on the golf course 2 days ago, Trip said, heading straight for the decanter of bourbon I kept on a side table. He poured himself a glass and gestured toward me with it. Want one? No thanks, Trip. I'm afraid our meeting won't last long enough for you to finish that. Now what's this all about? He asked affably as he took a seat in one of the chairs in front of my desk. You're not going to run for the Senate. In fact, you're not going to run for re-election. You're going to resign your position and scurry out of the spotlight like a cockroach on a kitchen floor. I beg your pardon? His knuckles whitened against the glass. I got out of my chair and rounded my desk. When we came on board, you assured me there weren't going to be any problems, any dirty little secrets. Do you remember that? Trip swallowed reflexively. Of course, I gave you my word. I don't know what you've heard, but I've been nothing, but I'm going to stop you there, Trip, because if you lie to my face, this will get ugly. And I don't have time for ugly. I handed over the folder Lena had prepared in record time. The glass slid from Trip's hand. I caught it before it hit the ground and placed it on my desk with a hard clink. I see I have your attention. How? Why? The bravado, the confidence was unraveling faster and faster now. You do know who I am, don't you, Trip? You understand how serious I am about protecting my clients while paving their way into history. Can you really be that stupid to think I would take you at your word? I protect my investments, even from themselves. I have a wife, daughters. You should have thought of them before you hired two sex workers in less than 24 hours. He was visibly shaking now. I warned you what would happen if you crossed me, I reminded him. I didn't cross you. This isn't what it looks like, he sputtered. The girl you hired this morning, she turned 18 last week. Your oldest daughter is what, 16? I asked. It's a sex addiction. I'll get help, Trip decided. We'll keep it quiet. I'll get treatment and everything will be fine. I shook my head. I see it's not sinking in yet. You're finished. There's no way for you to throw yourself on the mercy of the court of public opinion because they'll eat you alive, especially seeing as how you missed the vote on veterans' benefits because you were paying to have your cock sucked. Little beads of sweat dotted his forehead. You threw it all away because you couldn't keep your dick in your pants, your career, your future, your family. Your wife will leave you. Your daughters are old enough that they'll hear every salacious detail of daddy's extracurricular sex life. They'll never look at you the same again. I nodded at the open folder in his lap. I've already had a press release drafted about how my firm was forced to sever ties with you after learning about your sexual exploits. He closed his eyes, and I had to turn away when his lip began to tremble.
Please, don't do this. I'll do anything, he begged.
He was yet another weak, pathetic addition to the long list of men who risked everything just to get off. I'll give you a choice. You'll resign from Congress immediately. You'll go home and tell your wife and daughters that you had an epiphany and that your time together is precious. You don't want to work a job that keeps you away from them so much anymore. You'll go to fucking therapy, or you won't. You'll save your marriage, or you won't. One thing you won't do is ever cheat on your wife again, because if you do, I'll deliver copies of every photo and every video to your wife, your parents, your church, and every member of the media between here and fucking Atlanta. Trip put his head in his hands and let out a broken moan. I almost wished he'd put up more of a fight, then smothered that feeling. Get out, go home, and don't ever give me a reason to share the information I've collected.
I can be better. I can do better, he said, rising from the chair like a puppet on strings.
I don't give a fuck, I said, leading the way to the door. He was weak. No one could build a foundation on weakness. I opened the door and held it. Trip walked through, eyes down.
I was just bringing Ms. Chandra to you, sir, Petula said.
Trip looked up, defeat fully settling over him as his shoulders hunched.
What a small world, Trip,
Sheila Chandra said with the honeyed tones of Georgia. She looked back and forth between me and my ex-client. Sheila is going to be running for the seat you're so graciously vacating, Trip, I said. I'm glad we can count on your support. Trip shot me a parting look with red-rimmed eyes and said nothing as he marched out of my office. Sheila turned to me, eyebrows high.
I think I'm going to need an explanation and a drink.
A knock at my office door dragged me out of my never-ending inbox. I looked up to see Lena on the other side of the glass. It was after 6. The city outside my windows lit up the night sky. Most of the staff had gone home for the day, but I still had hours of catching up, thanks to my time in Knockemout. I gestured her inside. Is it done? I asked, firing off the reply and opening the next message. Yes. Good. Get out. I'm busy. She ignored the command and dropped down in the chair across from me.
How did it go with Chandra?
I took off my reading glasses, resigning myself to an unwanted conversation. Fine. The woman had accused me of Machiavellian-level manipulations, which I took as a compliment. Then she'd insisted on taking some time to consider my proposal that would have her taking Tripp's seat before making the run for higher office. The fact that she didn't immediately jump at my offer assured me I'd made the right decision. She'd poll higher with younger voters, do more for her constituents, and wouldn't fuck around with a golden opportunity like her predecessor had. She would see my offer for what it was, a chance to finally do the work she'd always wanted.
What's your endgame? Lena demanded.
That's an awfully personal question for someone who doesn't officially work for me.
Humor me. Today alone, you forced one of your own clients to resign the seat that you won him and made him do the walk of shame past the replacement you personally chose. Then you had me deliver an envelope full of cash to a sex worker who looks like she's barely old enough to vote and open the door of a very expensive gated home in Georgetown.
Is there a question in there?
I ran the address, she said, pausing to admire the engagement ring on her left hand.
Of course she had. Is there a point to this?
It took quite a bit of digging. But it appears that that big, beautiful brick house in the nice, quiet neighborhood is a halfway house for victims of domestic abuse and sex trafficking. It also appears to be owned by Yoshino Holdings, a subsidiary of a subsidiary of a subsidiary of this very consulting group.
It was annoying how good she was at her job. I'm still waiting for your point. I said.
I can't tell if you're a good guy or a bad guy.
Does it matter? She looked me straight in the eye.
I think it does to both of us. Are you just making power moves to remind people you're a big, strong man who needs to be feared? Or are you moving pieces around on the world's biggest chessboard for the greater good?
I attempted to hire you for your brain. Why don't you use it and tell me what you think? She leaned forward, resting her elbows on her knees.
I think you are putting friendly people in positions of power, and not just because they pay you to. Sheila Chandra is an elementary school principal. She doesn't have pockets deep enough to pay your fees. You don't just give Tripp and his fat wallet the boot. You destroy the man's career, citing the fact that he lied to you. But I think it's more than that. I think you don't like bad men in positions of power, which goes against the reputation you've built for being terrifying, ruthless, and maybe even a little evil.
I opened my hands. What can I say? I'm a complicated man. You should go home to Nash.
He's working late tonight. If I'm going to come on board, I want to know what you want out of all this. Are you hoping to get a U.S. president in your pocket?
Is that what you think?
On the surface, that's what it looks like. But I wonder if you're on some solitary quest to force the world to become a better place.
Don't mistake me for some kind of hero.
Oh, I'm not. Let's not forget the trail of ruined lives you leave behind you.
I crossed my arms over my chest. I don't ruin any life that doesn't deserve to be ruined. At least I tried not to.
But you take great pleasure in ruining the ones that do.
I do. Lena cocked her head and grinned.
Guess I kind of like that about you.
I'm delighted you approve, I said dryly. She gave me another long, assessing look and then nodded.
Fine, I'll take the job at 10% more than you offered, since Nash and I are building a house and I want a closet the size of a basketball court. But if you start turning toward the dark side or whatever, I'm out of here.
Fine, 10%. No dark side. I'll talk to HR. Now leave so I can focus on ruining more lives.
There's something else I want.
What? I asked, exasperated.
I want in on the secret Hugo investigation.
What secret Hugo investigation? I hedged.
The one I'm not supposed to know about. Because of Hugo, I almost lost Nash and he almost lost me. I want that man in a cell or a box. I'm not picky, but I do want to help put him there.
Deal. Now leave me alone.
One more question. Why are you such a dick to Sloan? Go away. And why is she a dick to you? She asked, cocking her head. Goodbye, Lena. If one of you doesn't tell me, I'll just have to start digging on my own. And then I'll rescind my offer and fire you. She rose and flashed me a grin. I think it's going to be fun working with you. How's Nash? I asked as she headed for the door. Lena turned, eyebrow arched. Shouldn't you be asking him that? I'm asking you. Nash had gone through a dark period after being shot, one Lena helped pull him out of. Her expression softened, as it always did when she talked about her fiancé. I doubted she was aware of it, and doubted more that she'd like attention drawn to that fact. He's good. His shoulder is almost back to 100%, and he hasn't had a panic attack since the fall. Good. Speaking of Nash, I'm going to need to start my official full-time employment Tuesday, because Monday is wedding dress shopping day. If you're looking for someone to ask you why you sound like wedding dress shopping is torture, you came to the wrong man. She scoffed. I don't sound like wedding dress shopping is torture. I don't care whether you do or you don't. I'm just not into the girly, fluffy bridal thing, and Naomi and Sloan took the day off to drive down here and watch me parade around like bridal Barbie. Sloan. My heartbeat picked up. Despite my best efforts, my brain cataloged each and every time the woman's name came up in conversation. Sloan would be in my city. Bring them by the office, I said. Lena looked as if she thought I'd lost my mind.
Why?
They're your friends. I'm sure they'd like to see where you officially work as of 2 minutes ago. She narrowed her eyes and brought a manicured finger to her jaw.
It's almost like you want me to bring Sloan into your inner sanctum.
You're annoying me. Go home before I fire you.
Be nicer to her, she ordered.
Or else what?
Or else I'll make your work life as miserable as possible while still doing my job, and I'm really, really good at miserable.
Emery, is the pair of symphony tickets you had delivered to my house your way of asking me out on a date?
Me, take them across the street, knock on the door, and ask her out. But change your shirt first. You're going for dateable man, not cuddly grandfather.
Emery, there's nothing wrong with cuddly.
8. Wedding Dress Hives. Sloan. For the first time since my dad passed away, I was up, showered, dressed, and ready to go earlier than necessary. It was day one of my official comeback. Mom was right. I couldn't wallow forever. I wasn't good at it anyway. So today, I'd slap on some lipstick and a smile and go wedding dress shopping. Tomorrow, I'd officially go back to work. I carted my breakfast dishes from the nook to the sink and grimaced when I found it already piled high with dirty plates and bowls. An oppressive, weighted blanket of doom settled over my shoulders. Energy was a precious commodity, and I'd already used all mine up putting my hair in a ponytail. I had 30 minutes before I had to leave. I could do the dishes, but did I really have the mental energy for strategic dishwasher loading? I peeked inside and groaned. It was already full, and judging from the smell, the dishes on the racks were not clean. Muttering to myself, I opened the cabinet under the sink and found the bottle of detergent. It was empty. Irritated, I hurled it into the sink. The ensuing rattle and crash of dishes collapsing on themselves had the cat galloping into the room like an investigative pony. You know, you could help out around the house, earn your keep, I told her. Meow Meow sneezed disdainfully and waddled past me. I looked at the fork and knife clock on the wall next to the portrait of a fruit bowl. If I left now, I could stop at one of those hip DC coffee shops where power-suited coffee aficionados began their day and treat myself to an expensive, unnecessary, high-calorie drink. Or I could cross something simple off my to-do list. I blew out a breath,
ruffling the hair that framed my face. There was one thing I could tackle now that would save me considerable trouble. My dating app profile. If I filled it out now, I wouldn't have to lie when Lena and Naomi asked me about it. I left the chaos of the kitchen behind me and drifted into the mulberry wallpapered dining room with its heavy antique furniture. There, I flopped down in the velvet wingback chair between the built-in china cabinet that housed more liquor than china and the stained glass window. Meow Meow launched herself onto the table, draping her considerable girth over the runner. There was already a sizable ring of cat hair visible on the russet table silk. The dull morning sunlight cast a judgmental spotlight on the dusty table surface. I blew out a breath. Lethargic moping hadn't done me or my house any favors. I put mascara and cute clothes on this morning. It's a start. Tonight, I'll dust and vacuum, I said conversationally to the cat as I opened the app Steph had forced me to download. Ugh, it's called Singles with a Z. The pictures of sexy singles near me had me perking up. You know, it's been a while since I've had sex. Maybe I'll match with my perfect future husband right away, and then I can get laid and snap out of this funk. Good sex, whether from a relationship or a flirtation-turned-hookup, had always been a nice reset for me. Like a spa day, only with more co-ed nudity. Meow Meow didn't seem impressed. She continued to lavish her front paws with her pink tongue. I turned my attention back to the screen. Username. I probably didn't have to get too creative here. After all, I had a 100% success rate when it came to walking into a bar on the prowl. It wasn't going to be that hard to find someone suitable on an app designed to match people up. I glanced around the room looking for inspiration. Books, booze, dust, cat. My thumbs flew over the keys. Look at that, I said. Four-eyed cat librarian isn't taken. Meow Meow shot me a disgruntled look, then yawned, baring her teeth. Likes? That was easy. Bad-tempered cats, books, and comfy pants, I muttered as I typed. Looking for? The standard options weren't very specific. There was a lot of mileage between companionship and marriage. I decided to go with other and typed in my best approximation. Okay, now all we need are a couple of pictures, and we're good to go. I scrolled through my camera roll and selected a handful of cute selfies. Boom! Done! I announced, dropping my phone in my lap like it was a microphone. It had only taken me 4 minutes, and now I wouldn't have to lie to my friends. I was starting to impress myself with this comeback. I glanced around the room for another easy task to cross off, and remembered that I'd promised Mom I would gather up any of Dad's old files. Since I was seeing Lena today, I could give them to her instead of paying a personal visit to suited Satan. I marched out of the dining room, looped through the living room, man, I really needed to dust, and entered the study. The cabinet behind the desk held a collection of old ballpoint pens, broken pencils, change, and rubber bands. In the second drawer of the desk, behind a stack of legal pads, I found Dad's candy stash. Pronounced pre-diabetic a few years before his first cancer diagnosis, he'd taken it upon himself to ration his candy to one piece per day. I pocketed a mini Kit Kat that was definitely too old to eat and moved on to the bottom drawer. It was a deep pullout with tabbed hanging folders. Most of them were empty, though their labels remained. Property taxes, gift ideas, fantasy football, kids' drawings, recipes. I paged through them, smiling at the ripped-out catalog pages filed under gift ideas and the stack of crayon drawings he'd collected over the years of being a father, an uncle, a grandfather, and a neighborhood favorite. Toward the back of the drawer were a few fat files. These I liberated and piled on top of the desk as the cat pranced into the room. She jumped onto the desk and placed her front paws on the stack of folders. "Excuse me, do you mind?" Meow Meow blinked at me and slowly deflated on top of the paperwork. I ruffled her ears and then marched into the hallway to grab my coat and tote bag. Just as I closed the closet door, I heard the frenetic skitter of claws, followed by a series of thumps coming from the study. There was a final, louder thud, and then Meow Meow careened into the hall and galloped off in the direction of the staircase. Back in the office, I discovered my neat stack of folders had exploded everywhere. "Freaking cat," I muttered. I sank to the floor and began gathering the jumble of paperwork. "Mr. I Can Be of Assistance to You" could put them back in their rightful order, I decided. A series of now mangled printouts of newspaper stories caught my eye. Upshaw sentenced to 20 years for drug arrest. Judge makes example of first-time drug offender. Defendant's family suggests Upshaw's sentence too harsh. I skimmed the headlines, but it was the picture of a devastated young man leaving a courthouse that caught my attention. The image was grainy and crumpled by cat feet, but I still recognized him. It was my father's law student protege, Alan. After an interminable amount of time spent suffering in Northern Virginia traffic, I slid out from behind the wheel of my Jeep with my phone pinned between my ear and shoulder. "Yeah, hey, Maeve, I have a question for you. It's about Dad. Give me a call when you get a chance," I said to my sister's voicemail before disconnecting the call. If Dad had been interested in Alan's mother's case, he probably would have discussed it at some point with my sister. I reached back inside to drag my tote across the console. I was 5 minutes late, which annoyed me, but I filed away the annoyance, straightened my shoulders, and pasted a cheerful smile on my face as I engaged bridesmaid mode. I plugged in the parking info on my app and marched the 2 blocks to the bridal shop. Rather than a bell tinkling when I opened the front door, angelic harp music announced my arrival. I found Naomi, Lena, and Steph seated on a pink velvet banquette, each holding a tall flute of champagne, surrounded by an explosion of underskirts, lace, and every tone of white identifiable by the naked eye. Naomi looked as though she was having the time of her life. Lena looked like she was about to vomit. "And how does our bride feel about one dress for the ceremony and a second dress for the reception?" asked a bald man rocking blue velvet loafers and matching cobalt glasses. Lena choked on her champagne. "One dress is more than enough," she insisted. Her eyes darted to me. "Oh, look, Sloan is here. I'd better go greet her." Her long legs wrapped in designer denim ate up the pink carpet between us.
"Help me. I feel like I'm suffocating in taffeta," she hissed, pulling me in for an awkward and unexpected hug.
"You must be terrified. You're voluntarily hugging me."
"I'll voluntarily make out with you if you help me pick a dress in the next 10 minutes so we can get out of here. I'm breaking out in hives."
"I thought you liked fashion."
"I like clothes I'm going to wear every day. I like badass heels and designer suits and luxury gym apparel. But apparently I don't like wedding dress shopping. It reminds me that..."
She looked over her shoulder.
"It reminds me that I'm getting married."
Prior to the appearance of the broody, wounded Nash Morgan, Lena had been more love 'em and leave 'em than get engaged and build a house together. She was still finding her way as a soon-to-be-married woman. I took her by the shoulders and squeezed.
"You still want to marry Nash, right?"
She rolled her eyes.
"Of course I do, but not dressed as some virginal princess."
"Lena, what do you think about a veil?" Naomi called from the girly couch where Steph was modeling an 8-foot-long veil with seed pearls.
Oh, God, Lena squeaked. I'm either not going to survive this or I'm going to pick a dress that I hate just to get it over with.
Oh, boy, I whispered as she towed me toward our friends.
Ahmad, the dress shop employee with great shoes and a surprisingly thick southern drawl,
led Lena back to a dressing room while a series of unsmiling assistants paraded after them, carrying 5 gowns that looked increasingly princessy. Naomi sat back on the couch and took a satisfied sip of champagne. Why do you look so smug? She's going to hate every single one of those dresses, I asked, accepting the glass Steph poured me.
I know, Naomi said gleefully.
Witty here has a plan, Steph explained.
What kind of plan?
The kind of plan that ends with our friend getting her perfect wedding dress, Naomi declared.
You're either being cocky or diabolical, I mused. I can't wait to see which one.
So, hook up with any baby daddies yet? Steph asked me.
Jeez, I literally just set up my profile. Give me a day or two to find the perfect man. Did you ask Jeremiah about moving in together yet?
Naomi hid her smile behind a delicate cough. Steph glared at her over the rim of his champagne.
Oh, come on, Naomi teased. Tell her your latest excuse.
It's not an excuse. Closet space is very important to a relationship, and the man just doesn't have enough. It would never work. My wardrobe and I have been through a lot together. It deserves a beautiful, spacious home. Not a few rolling racks next to pieces of an actual motorcycle that he took apart in the living room, he said with a shudder.
You're right, I agreed. Closet space is definitely more important than being in love and sharing your life with someone. I'm sure you can cuddle up to those suede leopard loafers at night just as easily as you can Jeremiah. You probably won't even notice the difference.
Naomi grinned. See, I told you.
Steph sniffed.
Wedding dress shopping makes you too mean.
Here comes our beautiful bride, Ahmad called.
Showtime, Naomi said, clapping her hands. I hit the video call button on Lena's phone, and her mother immediately appeared on screen. It's time, I told her. Bonnie Solavita was seated behind an executive desk and holding a mimosa.
I'm ready.
Lena slunk out in an ivory ball gown so wide she had to turn sideways to squeeze between 2 mannequins. The spaghetti straps glittered with rhinestones. The corset was tied with a pink satin ribbon. There were so many layers of tulle I had to press my lips together in order not to make a Scarlett O'Hara joke. The bride didn't look like she was in the mood for jokes. She looked downright miserable.
Oh my gosh, that dress was made for you, Naomi crooned.
You look amazing, I managed to choke the words out.
I'm speechless, Steph said before turning to me and mouthing, what the fuck?
Wow, that is some dress, sweetie,
Bonnie piped up on screen. Ahmad rested his chin on his knuckles and studied her while his assistants fluttered around Lena, fluffing the skirt until it seemed to double in size.
Do you love it? He demanded.
There aren't words that properly describe how much I hate this dress,
Lena said through clenched teeth. Ahmad clapped his hands.
To the dressing room,
Lena practically ran.
That dress was something, wasn't it? Bonnie asked nervously.
I flipped the phone around so I could see her. Naomi says she has a plan, I explained.
What kind of plan?
I don't know. She won't tell me. Naomi leaned over Steph to see Lena's mom.
Don't worry, Bonnie. We're going to make sure Lena goes home with the perfect dress, I promise you.
Well, that definitely wasn't it.
Bonnie said, taking a gulp of mimosa. It looked like a white haystack.
Here she comes again, Steph said, shoving Naomi back into position.
We repeated the process 4 more times, with each dress outdoing the awfulness of the one before it.
You're looking a little flushed, sweetheart. Maybe you should take a break and do some deep breathing,
Bonnie suggested from the screen.
I'm fine, Mom,
Lena said, sounding anything but fine.
My heart is fine. I'm just breaking out from neck to toe lace.
That's very common for brides,
Ahmad spoke up.
We suggest slathering yourself in antihistamine cream if you're going to wear something that irritates the skin.
You look beautiful, Naomi assured her.
Itchy, but beautiful, I agreed.
You know what? I think I've had enough trying on dresses for one day,
Lena said, already unbuckling the crystal belt one of the assistants had lassoed around her waist.
Someone get me out of this thing before my skin peels off.
Oh boy, she's gonna blow,
Steph predicted under his breath. As Lena danced in place while an assistant began to work on the first of 70,000 buttons running down her back, Naomi gave Ahmad a nod. He turned toward the back of the store and made a series of elaborate swooping gestures. 2 employees appeared, lugging a mannequin between them. The mannequin was already dressed in a strapless gown with black floral appliques that began at the fitted bodice and spilled down over the full skirt.
That goes in the window display, ladies,
Ahmad said to the women. Lena glanced up in the mirror and froze.
What's she looking at?
Bonnie demanded from the phone. I angled the screen so she could see the dress.
That one,
Lena said, pointing at the gown.
This? It just arrived this morning. No one's even tried it on yet,
Ahmad said coyly.
It's a beautiful gown, Bonnie prompted.
I don't know, Steph mused. How many brides could get away with wearing black on their wedding day?
I'll try that one on, but after that, we're leaving,
Lena announced, shoving herself out of the dress. She flounced away from the 3-way mirror in a strapless bra and underwear. Ahmad snapped his fingers at the women who made quick work of disrobing the mannequin.
Oh my God, that's the dress, I said.
I know, Naomi agreed.
It's freaking fabulous, Steph said.
I know, Naomi said again with a smug smile.
And so is Lena,
Bonnie agreed.
Exactly,
Naomi said, perching on the edge of the cushion, eagerly watching the dressing rooms.
You're diabolical, I told her. I only use my powers for good, she explained.
Here she comes, Steph said, sounding excited for the first time.
Lena swept into view like a queen. I gasped. Naomi was already fanning her hands in front of her face to ward off tears. Steph's hands shot out to grip my knee and Naomi's. Lena ascended the pedestal, dropped the skirts, and struck a regal pose.
Dead. I'm dead,
Ahmad said, clutching his chest theatrically.
Nash is going to be when he takes one look at her, I predicted.
Bonnie let out a choked sob from the phone. Lena whirled around, the skirt floating around her like it was alive.
Mom, don't cry. You have a meeting in 20 minutes,
Lena insisted.
I can't help it. It's so perfect for you. Just like Nash. It just makes me so happy,
Bonnie wailed. I wondered for the briefest of seconds what it felt like to be standing there wearing a beautiful dress, knowing that I was going to marry the man of my dreams. Would I have that moment? And if I did, would it be dimmer because I knew my father wouldn't be here to walk me down the aisle? Tears prickled behind my eyes.
Damn it! No crying. No self-pity.
I was comeback Sloane, truly excellent bridesmaid, not Debbie Downer of the Womp Womp family.
It is beautiful, and it is me, Lena conceded. But what shoes would I wear?
Your black lace-up Jimmy Choo boots with the crystal bands, Steph said.
Ooh, edgy, comfortable, and regal, I said.
Shit, they would be perfect with this, Lena said, fingering one of the black appliques.
This dress was made for you, Ahmad decided. It would be an absolute travesty to let anyone else even try her on.
His minions bobbed their heads in agreement. Lena spun back around to study herself in the mirror. Her eyes met mine.
What do you think, Sloane?
It's so perfect I can barely look at you, I admitted.
It is, isn't it?
She brought her hand to her chest.
Are you having premature ventricular contractions? Bonnie demanded.
Lena rolled her eyes.
No, Mom, I'm falling in love with a damn wedding dress.
All the occupants of the little pink couch erupted in cheers.
Now, let's talk about bridesmaid dresses, Lena said.
I can't believe I found a dress.
Lena pushed her plate away with a gusty, satisfied sigh.
No one else had even tried it on. It's like fate, or whatever you weirdo romantics believe in.
We were squeezed into a small booth in the back of a trendy bistro. Steph had skipped lunch under the guise of having a conference call. Personally, I thought he was just avoiding being heckled about his lack of movement on the moving in together front. I shot a glance at Naomi over my fancy-ass grilled cheese. She beamed all her happy newlywed vibes in Lena's direction as they dissected every detail of the dress. A good friend called the bridal shop and pre-ordered the perfect gown. A great friend pretended like fate was the real hero. My phone vibrated on the table and I picked it up. It was a call from my sister.